Thank you, Professor Erdmann, Professor McMurray. Dear colleagues, I do not know what being on this stage does to my anemia, but I can promise you it's not very good for the quality of life, being on such a big stage. But it is a prevalence to talk about that, and I would like to speak about quality of life and set the stage how important it is to address this issue. Unfortunately, I have no conflicts of interest. And I would like to talk about quality of life and anemia. And these guys from the Journal of the American Medical Directors Association, I did not know this journal existed, but they already had took it. They said, anemia, it's all about quality of life. And looking in daily care, I think when we treat patients, we know that heart failure and anemia and quality of life is very interrelated, and that quality of life is very important to our patients. So, and they also in this editorial, they said, why bother? We often think, why bother? And that's what I would like to discuss a little bit with you today here. And if it's so important, you would think there's a lot of publications. So I looked it up and I did a rough Medline search. And I looked at anemia, and there's a lot of papers on anemia, as you all know. Then if you look at anemia in the elderly, there is also a lot of papers written about that. But then going to heart failure, it is only like less than 2,500 papers on heart failure and anemia. But then, going to quality of life, and this is another scaling, if you look at anemia and quality of life, there's not actually so much about it. More than 2,000 papers on anemia and quality of life in general, but then looking at heart failure, there's only 124 papers out on this issue. So there's a lot of room for additional research on this topic. So I will shortly address why bother about quality of life, and I think deep in our hearts we all know why it's so important, but I will bring you some data. I will talk about quality of life and anemia of chronic diseases, and especially in heart failure. And then I would like to bring a little bit more also practical for you. How can you measure quality of life in your practice or in your future studies? And I also took a look at the definitions of the World Health Organization. And already long ago, the World Health Organization recognized that health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease. So we should not only focus on curing the patients or getting the patients better, but also on making the patients feel better. And as researchers and policymakers, we also know that patient-centered outcomes, such as quality of life or symptoms assessed by patients, are getting more and more important. We moved out of the arena that survival and morbidity is the only important issue to address. Patient-centered outcomes are getting more important in clinical care, but also quality assessment, you know probably from your own institutions, benchmarking, disease management, and clinical trials. Increasingly, quality of life or symptoms are addressed in clinical trials. And actually a very nice paper of John Spurtus in Circulation brings that nicely, that it's more than only looking at disease, it's also looking at symptoms, functional limitation, and quality of life. So it's a whole continuum. And you cannot look at one thing without also looking back to, for example, what caused this decrease in quality of life? Is it functional limitation? Are it the symptoms of patients? And then these are the things how you can look at it, how to measure it, what it is, these concepts. So symptoms in heart failure, of course, are often fatigue, dyspnea, edema, which can lead to affect several dimensions of quality of life, physical, emotional, mental, social. And it keeps the patient from living as desired. So these are the concepts in a little continuum, and addressing that quality of life is an issue in heart failure. So how are our heart failure patients doing? And there's been some work in this. So this is heart failure and quality of life without looking specifically at anemia. We know that quality of life of patients with heart failure is lower compared to an age-matched healthy control, but that seems obvious, doesn't it? But it's also lower compared to a lot of other patient groups, patients with hypertension, Parkinson's disease, cancer, depression, hemodialysis. So there are a lot of other diseases that affect quality of life, but often heart failure patients are worse off. And we also know that quality of life is related to symptoms and anemia. And looking a little bit closer at these symptoms, I'm often asked, like, yeah, well, symptoms of heart failure, it's very difficult to interpret, because also if you look at depression, patients are fatigued and tired. If you look at anemia, patients are have for example, loss of energy. And if you look at this slide, you can see that a lot of symptoms of heart failure overlap or relate to symptoms of anemia. And I can assure you, if you ask the patients, they don't care. If it's fatigue from the anemia or fatigue from heart failure, they just worry about it and their life is affected. So I think it is important to look at the symptoms from the patient perspective. And the patient will not come and say, well, I have so much sleeping problems because of my heart failure or because of my anemia. They just suffer from the sleeping problems or other indicators of worse quality of life. So all these comorbidities, like I mentioned, depression and anemia, they have consequences for the patient, but also consequences for us as healthcare providers. We know that comorbidities affect survival, but also have an effect on the effectiveness of treatment. Patients with comorbidities have higher risk of complications, and we also know that patients with a lot of comorbidity are often more difficult to uptitrate medication, for example, patients with renal problems. Interaction of medication, if a patient has COPD and diabetes and heart failure, as one third of all our patients have, we know it's difficult with all these medications, the interactions, but also compliance issues. Patients often have complicated lifestyle changes to make. If they have more than one disease, patients get confused about all these different guidelines they get to drink more or to drink less, to take this medication at this time of day or not. So we need a lot of tailored interventions. So the anemia has and depression and all COPD, they have consequences for the patient, for survival, but also for our interventions that we provide to patients. So setting that quality of life and symptoms into a bigger picture, I found this nice model I liked, because it states that anemia affects exercise tolerance, and that also affects other things like frailty, functional loss, depression, care needs of patients. Patients would need more attention of different aspects of their life. Maybe institutional long-term care, increased costs. So it affects a lot, and then patients will get less mobile, more other dangers, for example, falls. Patients will start to less to move and to exercise, and so this whole circle will get them worse and worse. So, and we always look, also in clinical practice, to find some things to change that circle. So I would like to also bring you some other view on quality of life, and longer or better in advanced heart failure. And Lynn Warner Stevenson from Boston, she has this nice paper, and there's also other papers on that. I just had to cut some slides out. So there's a nice paper from Lewis also on this. And they ask patients if they want to live longer or if they want to live better. And of course, it's a very difficult choice, but they have good techniques, I will tell you a little bit about later, to assess this. And this is a really nice paper. And so what they did is ask patients if how much time they were willing to trade, so little or no time, 3 to 11 months, 12 to 21 months, or almost all the time, to get a better quality of life. And they found that the median trade for better quality of life was 3 months of survival time. So they wanted to trade 3 months of their life for a better quality of life. And if you look then a little closer to that, these results, you could see that most of the patients are here or here. So patients either want to trade a lot of their time when they feel very bad, probably, and they want to do everything to feel better, or if they feel a little better, they don't want to lose their time for quality of life because they already have a good quality of life. So there is some issues in using that concept, but Lynn Warder Stevenson in that article also said, you can discuss this with the patient, you can use it in a consultation and get more insight in how a patient thinks about quality of life. So then a little bit on measuring quality of life in heart failure. And of course, I do not have the idea that I can handle every instrument because on Sunday morning we had a whole session on only 3 or 4 of these questionnaires. But just to give you some idea that we usually have like 2 questionnaires available, but there's a lot of other ways you can get practical or more in-depth information on quality of life. So I will discuss a few, but just to point out to you that you could use disease-specific versus very generic instruments that they also can use in diabetes, renal function, etc. You could use one item, or you can use very large scales. And then there's a few new models, ways to measure it. So you can use a standard model versus the uniqueness of an individual. Because I'm sure that my quality of life is meaning something is different than some aspects maybe of your quality of life. And in these new methods, they take that into account. Just a brief overview on that. So a lot of us use the short form 36. And as discussed yesterday twice, people said, well, why is it called a short form? Because it's 36 items. It takes ages or a lot of time of patients to complete. But there's also a short form 12. And this is the short form 36. And as you can see, it has different components. So mental components, physical components, more on the role of patients, well-being, energy, fatigue. So that's a very broad scale. And it's used in a lot of disease population. And there are also comparing data of a healthy patient, or healthy persons, sorry. This is some data from our COACH study. That was a large study on disease management, and we also measured quality of life and in heart failure patients, so that's the red line. And we compared that, and we collected data at the same time as the COACH study in 5,000 patients from the general population who had, of course, some comorbidities. And you could see that patients with heart failure were actually worse off in all these domains of the RENT or the SF36. And this is just, I know this is a bitchy slide, but just to illustrate to you that it's also in the chronic kidney disease, you looked with this short form 36 on differences in quality of life of patients with anemia or not, and they found significant differences in several components of this general quality of life questionnaire. Then, of course, we all know our good old Minnesota Living with Heart Failure Questionnaire. And it's sort of a gold standard, and a lot of people don't like it. But it is a quality of life questionnaire that's used in a lot of studies. And it has 21 items. And patients can score if they have if their heart failure prevents them from living as they want it. And they can say, no, this symptom did not, or heart failure did not affect that, or very little, very much on this scale. And we were discussing on how practical the instrument is, and until now it's often used as pen and paper, but more and more heart failure clinics or organizations use it, ask patients before they come to the clinic to fill it in, and then you will have a Minnesota score when they enter your room. It's the same as you have an EKG or a lab test. So there are possibilities to use it also in practice, but until now it's mostly used in research. Then we have the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire, which you heard also a lot about during this meeting and other meetings. And it's a little broader and more in-depth measuring of quality of life. And they not only assess symptoms, but also the symptom burden, symptom stability, and other aspects of quality of life. And they make different scores. And it's used in the FHF, and it was also used in an other study in this field, also proving that the Minnesota or the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire is sensitive for change and very suitable to use in this population. So that will bring me to. So these were the questionnaires, generic and disease specific, and that will bring me to other way of looking at instruments. So you have the questionnaires, the scales you saw. Then I would like to show you, you have this one item. And this is what we call the ladder of life. I use it in a lot of studies, and it's very easy to administer. You have this ladder on a piece of paper or on your computer, and you'll ask patients, so imagine for what would for you would be the best quality of life. Just have a picture of that. And then again, think about something that would be for you, the worst quality of life. So patients think about that for a minute, and then you ask them how they are now on this ladder of life. So, and it's easy to use also in practice, and it's used a lot in research. And then to go a little on these new models. So you have the EuroQol, it's not new, but it's a very standard model, and they have two newer ideas on that. So this is the EuroQol. A lot used, I think, in our studies also to calculate the QALYs, and it's a standardized instrument. There's a whole organization around it, and until now you only could use it on pen with pen and paper, but they're now developing an internet-based module, so you can use it also in electronic CRFs. And this is the sequel, and that is addressing what I said before, that for every patient, quality of life is different. So if we have this standard instrument, it might not measure the quality of life of a patient population you're investigating. So they developed this sequel, and it's used, and it's validated. So they ask patients to specify five areas from a certain choice they make of their life that are most important, and they have to make this pie chart, what is most important. And then they have to rate their current status in each of these areas using a visual analog scale that ranges from 0 to 10. And then they calculate a score of quality of life. And I thought it was quite a nice approach that we don't use a lot in heart failure. We have these standardized instruments. But this is another approach we might want to use. And then finally, a little bit about this standard gamble and time to trade off, which Lynn Warner-Stevenson used in that article. That is this that measures the willingness of a patient to trade a shorter survival time for better health. And there's a lot of discussion. I was in the bus yesterday discussing this, like, oh, is this a good way or not? But she uses it a lot, and they also said that patients really can use this in the discussion with you, what they want to trade or not. And then you have a method that's not used that often, but it's standard gamble. And it's used often if there are new therapies with a risk of dying. And then patients are also asked what do they want to still offer to have a better quality of life. So that's a newer ways of measuring quality of life, and it might be worth to look into that if you want to do new studies in this area. So to summary, why bother? I think there is an important role for patient preferences and a growing importance of these preferences, but also We cannot escape to have a more attention for patient-centered outcomes in our practice and in our trials. Quality of life is it's related to anemia, it's related to heart failure, and treating anemia may improve quality of life. And there are a lot of instruments around to measure quality of life, so we can use it in practice and in research. But we should consider some new approaches and not stick to the old measurement instruments, I think. So finally, a quote I came by. Anemia is not an innocent bystander, but a major player in the quality of life in heart failure. And then I will leave you with a nice quote. It would seem important to devote more of the energies of man to improve quality of life so that it may be joyous or noble or creative. Otherwise, existence is nothing but the bored unwinding of a dismal biological clock. I would like to thank you for your